So today's perek is perek Yud Aleph, perek 11 in Sefer Yoshua, and we just finished the remarkable story of how after we established the Knesset to Eretz Yisrael through Ai and Yericho, in which we thought everything was going to be sort of Ai-oriented, we suddenly, because of the story of the Givonim, had the most remarkable experience of all at one shot, Pam Achat, all in one shot, being able to take over the entire Droma Aretz because of the Givonim. And we went ahead and responded to the threat that was on the Givonim, which wasn't even aimed directly at Yisrael. They called for help. Because we responded to the call for help, we ended up with the most effective piece of Kivush Eretz Yisrael, in which essentially the time of the Knisa, which is not really part of the time of the Kibush, the Knisa, we would have thought, would have ended at Ai. Now it's time to set up the tactics for the Kibush of Eretz Yisrael. We'll decide where to go next, and do we take the north, do we take the south? And all of a sudden, into our lap, because of the response to the Givonim, fall all of these very powerful rulers and cities in the south of the country. And now we can begin thinking about Kibush. But what's interesting is, you would have thought that at this point, we've sort of established that it's just not worth fighting us. So, we saw the introduction to all of this was similar to the Gog and Magog issues. Times when people simply can't learn a lesson. And we had the same thing happen in Mitzrayim. You're not ready to give up, huh, Paro? You simply can't learn a lesson. And when was that? Borod. We just finished the Avnei Al-Gavish, right? So Paro had his opportunity with Borod. Moshe tells him, okay, tomorrow, such and such a date, this is what's going to happen. You got a chance to just put everybody inside Eretz shelters. Paro's response is, no way. If you say we need Eretz shelters, I say we don't. Okay. So this is basically the stage that we're up to right here. And instead of responding to what was a foregone conclusion that you can't start with the Jews, what happens is that Vayehi Kishmoa Yavin Melech Hatzor, Vayishlach El Yovav Melech Madon, Vel Melech Shimron, Vel Melech Achshav, Ve'el HaMelechim Asher Mitzafon. Some learn this, that it's essentially Mitzafon, from the north. But then, of course, it's strange that it doesn't say Mitzafon. It says Tzfon, which means that it's Samuch. So then it would be as if it's telling us from Tzvon of his city, or the Tzvon of the Har. This is a machlokas, how to read it. And he calls them Bahar Uba Arava. This is not referring to what we call the Arava today, but it's the Emek HaYarden, essentially. Negev Kinarot. So this would be to the south of the Kinaret, so going down towards Beit Shan in the valley. Uba Shvela. Uba Nefod Dor Miyam, and towards the west, it would be the area of Dor, which is around Itlit, that it's called here. It's the first time we see this, Napot. Napot is the same word that we find Yefei Nof, the Sos Kol Ha'aretz. So Nof is the general area. Yeah. Napot Dor would mean the county, essentially. We use it today to mean an area. So the area of Dor towards the sea. And this was inhabited by the Aknani, Mimizrach, Umiyam. So you have the Knani going down the east side and along the coast. The Amoriva, Chitiva, Priziva, Yevusi, they inhabited the Har area. The Chivi were Tachat Hermon, they were towards the foot of the Hermon. The upper part of the Hermon had already been part of the conquering that they had before, the Bashan. This was already from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. But the foothills of the Hermon, Be'eretz HaMitzpah, which is the area where, of course, we have put our radar today, because it's the same mitzvah that it always was. Gives you the best possible look. And, yeah, but these melachim, let's note that Yavin Melech Hatzor, it's all very nice to talk about Melech Hatzor as if he's just one of the melachim. It turns out, we're going to see later on by Dvorah and in other locations, Hatzor is called Knan. We refer to him, the same guy. It's not the same guy, but apparently every king of Hatzor was called Yavin. But apparently, he's called there Melech Kenan, who's in Hatzor. So that means that Hatzor was the center of the Tarbut of Kenan. And in fact, the Medrash in Yerushalmi insists that what we're about to see in the War of Hatzor was not a normal part of the War of Kibush, but was a Misorah that had been given directly from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua, that Hatzor has to be treated differently than any of the other cities in the Kibush, as we'll see. So anyway, as opposed to yesterday, where the attack wasn't really against the Jews, it was against the Allied forces, which included Givon, and the Jews were drawn out and ended up, without even planning, doing a surprise attack that wiped out all of the resistance in the south. Vayetzu heim v'chol machaneim imam am rav kachol asher sfat hayam larov. Out came a massive army, v'sus v'rechev rav mod. For the first time, we're talking about an army that's equipped with tanks. This is probably the Rechav Barzal that we see later on, and lots of sus. Now, of course, Bnei Yisrael were not a mechanized army at all. They were all on foot. So this was a pretty scary kind of army. They would never, ever had this massive attack of the Axis powers. It's supposed to be basically a blitzkrieg against the Jews to get rid of them once and for all. And Vayivadu, you know, they had their Chatzor conference, Kol HaMelachim HaEle, to get together and get their tactics clear. Vayavoh Vayachanu Yachdav, they all get together, El Mei Meirom, Lilachem Im Yisrael. Now, some people say Mei Meirom is actually Meiron, but, why not? There is a reason why not. The reason why not is that Rechev Barzel would not do very well in Meiron. So in other words, it's mashma that it makes more sense to say that the use of the Rechev Barzel, being as they didn't have kind of tanks that can just go over mountains, that was in use more in the Shvela area. And there is an area that they call Meirom, an area of a lot of springs, this is why it's called Meirom, towards the center of the country, which is below all of this mountainous area. Vayomer Adonai Yehoshua, and so this is a pretty scary sight. Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yehoshua and tells him, Al tiram yipneihem. Now look at those words. You ever hear those words before? Ki machar ka'et hazot. That's Moshe Rabbeinu putting the line on the wall and saying, this is Rashi points out. This, when the sun gets to this point, that's when the bombardment starts. Now you can decide what you want to do. So basically what we're looking at is people who simply cannot give up. They're going to fight no matter what happens. So be, have no fear, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tomorrow at this time, Anochi noten et kulam chalalim lifnei Yisrael, they are all going to be dead ducks, lying there in front of Bnei Yisrael. But even though I've told you until now that every battle is not to be in any way, not to damage the cities, you're not to damage other than the specific places where we had the Sreifa, which we'll talk about. But here, even though I told you take the behemot for you, these behemot are not to be taken. The susim are to be destroyed as usable war animals, to Aker. The Merkavotehem, instead of taking their tanks and adopting their tanks, destroy their tanks. Now, this is unbelievable. This is a great opportunity. You just got into possession of 1,000 tanks. I mean, what's wrong with keeping the tanks? But we do know that the relationship of Sus Verochvo Ramavayam sounds very familiar. The promise about Mitzrayim was Kol Chel Paro, Ofen Merkavotav. Literally, it gets down into the gears on his tanks. And this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was against. Don't go down to Mitzrayim to buy sus. So in other words, the idea over here is the trust that people put in tools. Exactly. These people put their trust in the tools of war. And therefore, you're terrified. You don't have the tools. Don't worry about it. As a matter of fact, throw it all into the junk pile because it's completely useless. You shouldn't even think about adopting it because all that it's going to do is going to affect you psychologically to know that it's lo b'chayil v'lo b'chawach ki'im beruchi, with a couple of good tactics on the side, like coming up pitom or maybe having the ambush behind you. But basically all of this is because we're mechuyev to... This is a fascinating thing, because on the one hand, you're mechuyev to proceed along natural lines. So we send the meraglim, and we do these tactics. So at what point do we stop? I mean, why not invest in F-16s, and why not invest in tanks and so on, as being the essential mode of warfare? So perhaps this has something to do with the special tzivui that is now, at the time of Knesset Haaretz, which, even though it's no longer the Aron HaBrit that's there, and definitely, there's no longer the same, since Ochan, there's no longer the same presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the nature of the Nisim that have been shown to us indicate that there's a limit to what we need to do. We need to basically do our Hishtadlut according to what's in our hands, and not, as is often the case, do B'tachbulot, Tasem Milchama, which, as Shlomo HaMelech says, doesn't really mean tricks, but it means with complete and total commitment. So, Vayavo Yoshua v'chol am ha-milchama imo alayhem. And this, of course, is tremendously soyan. I mean, because you're turning your back on what you think is really going to be a help. It's hard to watch the burning of things that could be such a help. And they all come to the milchama imo alayhem al-mei meron pit'om, the second time that we use the surprise attack over here in this way. And it was the rapid movement of Yoshua, probably with scouts that knew exactly where they were, that allowed the attack that was Vayiplu Bahem, Vayitneim Adonai Beyad Yisrael, Vayakum Vayirdefum Ad Sidon Rabba. They went all the way up to Sidon the Great, that is already from the time of Noah, basically. Vayad, which we call Shem Rabba in the same way. Vayad Misrafot Maim, and to the place where they have those salt ponds where they evaporate the water. Va'ad bikat mitzpeh mizracha, va'yakum ad bilti shir lahem sarid, also to the east of the valley of the mitzpeh that we discussed, nothing, no survivors. Va'yas lahem Yoshua kasher amar lo Adonai, and despite the difficulty, the tzivoy was completely done, et suseyem iker, et markavoteyem saraf pe'ish. Va'yoshav Yoshua be'et ahi, Vayukod et chatzor v'et malka hikabachere, ki chatzor lefanim hirosh kol hamamlachot ha'ela. Chatzor represented the chief vision of Canaan in this entire area, and therefore it was treated differently than the cities that were allowed to, if they're altilam, they were allowed to remain altilam. These are the cities that are miyamot Yoshua ben Nun. Instead, chatzor was destroyed. Vayakut kol hanefesh asher ba lefi cherev hacharem lo notar kol neshama ve'et chatzor soraf be'esh ve'et kol harei hamlachim ha'ela, the other cities, ve'et kol machiem lakat Yoshua vayakem lefi cherev echrimotam. Yes, he destroyed the people, kasher tziva Moshe eved Adonai, but rak kol harim ha'omdot al tilam lo sirafam Yisrael. These fortified cities were not destroyed. Why should they be destroyed? Zulati et chatzor levada Saraf Yoshua. It was Chatzor and only Chatzor that was part of a special tzivui that was given to Yoshua. The Lashon of the Medrash is b'misoret sarfu. It was burnt as a misorah. Rashi brings this over here. Moshe tzivalo umasarlo kein, which means that Chatzor is seen as part of not the standard kibosh, but as another stage of Yericho, Ai, and Chatzor. Central visions of the way in which we destroy the, not only the population, but the culture of Canaan. Rabbanea, you wanted to add?
Chatzor is the largest destroyed city in the country. It's 200 acres.
Tel Chatzor is next to Chatzor.
And there's a layer of burning over the entire Tel, and the argument that they have in the academics is the dating to Yeshua or not. But there's a clear evidence of a sreifa over Avodah Zarah. In fact, the stones crack from the heat of the fire that's now excavated. You can see it.
So Chatzor was unique. V'chol shlal ha'arim ha'ele v'aveima bazezu lehem b'nei Yisrael. There was no cherem. That was well established at this point. Rak et kol ha'adam yikul lefi cherev ad yishmidam otam lo yishiru kol neshama. This, of course, was the mitzvah of the destroying of the Shiva Amamim, other than those that went away, or that surrendered, which were only the Givonim, they could have just surrendered. Kasher tziva Adonai et Moshe avdo, kein tziva Moshe et Yoshua, v'chein asa Yoshua, lo yisir davar, mikol asher tziva Adonai et Moshe. There was nothing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yerushalmi, is medayeg. It's mashma, even the things that Moshe didn't tell him. So anything that had been a mitzvah to Moshe, Yoshua understood as a given from between the lines. He didn't need to be told everything in detail. And from here you learn out that something that a Sanhedrin is meiser nefesh on it, sof shu mitkayem. It doesn't matter whether l'maisa it was given over specific instructions. Min hahar hechalak ha'ole seir. Vaykach Yoshua et kol ha'aretz hazot. And so Yoshua took the entire country. Ahar v'et kol ha'negev, v'et kol eretz ha'goshen, v'et ha'shvela, ve'et ha'arava, ve'et har Yisrael, u'shvelato, u'shvelato, it should be, it's written shvelata, as we often have in poetic language, we have the hey thrown in. But this har Yisrael is not clear. Some say har Yisrael refers to all of the Harei HaGalil. That was the area that was identified as the place where the Jews are, Avram Avinu, and so on. So, or maybe a particular place. Minahar hechalak. Nahar hechalak is a double meaning. It's the har that splits into two, and it's the smooth har, meaning it's a granite har in which things don't grow, as opposed to a sa'ir har, which is covered with growth. It's another way of reading it. So we have a har hechalak ha'oleh sa'ir v'ad ba'al gat b'bikat ha'levanon. Some say this is ba'al bek in the Levanon. So this was the center of Avodah Zarah. Tachat Har Hermon, which means that it was on the foothills of Har Hermon to the northeast area, northwest area. Ve'itkom al chayim lachad, capturing all of their kings, vayakem vayimitein. But as opposed to yesterday's war, where it was all pa'amachat, this was done instantly from one place to another, moved on every day, new location, another battle, another victory. This was yamim rabim. It makes it sound as if this took no time at all. But Lamai says, the Medrash, as the Gemara tells us, this took 7 years of fighting. So it was Yamim Rabim Asa Yahushua et kol ha'malachim ha'el ha'milchama. And furthermore, as the Medrash is medayik, wherever it says Yamim Rabim, it means Yamim Shel Tzar, that we saw also back in Mitzvah. Vayhi ba'yamim ha'rabim ha'en. We see it again by the Megillah in the period of the preparation for the second Beis HaMikdash. And we see it over here by the Knesset La'aretz. And we see it in terms of Tumak. Yazuv Zov Damad Yamim Rabim. So that means that we also have, the same way the Oshek Kvod Malchuto was Yamim Rabim, Shmonim Amad Yom, they were Yomim Shel Tzar for Yisrael. The remez, and this is the only remez that we have, that these wars were not so chalak, the way we've been talking until now. Notice the Torah gives us no details about these wars. They were tough wars. They were wars that indeed were fought along the lines of Ai, not fought along the lines of Yericho. They were wars in which tactics were already understood by the Goyim as to how it is that we had fought and so on. And therefore it took a great deal of time. And of course there's two other reasons. One is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to us, you're not going to take over the place overnight, because Pen Yirgu Alecha Chayat HaSadeh. We need to have a gradual settlement and then you'll move in. Was because of that, and of course because of the issue that we spoke about yesterday, which is that Yoshua was not all that anxious to complete Kibush Haaretz, since he knew that that was his life. And as Moshe Rabbeinu had been told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nekom Nikmat Min HaMidyanim, and then die, he didn't hesitate to be Nekom Nikmat Yisrael Min HaMidyanim. But Yoshua indeed became very old during this period. He aged terribly, died young. We know he died young, relatively young. He's only 110 years old.
Younger.
I mean, yesterday they had this article about this guy, 114, who was upset that they were putting him into an old age home here in Petach Tikva. So so he died relatively young.
And where to park his car?
And the reason, and we know that he died before his time. How do we know that? Because we always have to quote where? Kasher Hayiti Moshe. Moshe lived for Me'avesrim Shana, which means that he was really ro'i for living Me'avesrim Shana. But as the Medrash says, you think you're going to prolong your life by taking it slow? Rabot Machshavot Belevish Vatzata Shemitakum. You're going to shorten your life by taking it slow. However, it is important to distinguish between two issues. One is the kibush per se of the centers of population, which include these cities. That needed to be done by the army. All of Yisrael participated. B'nai Gad v'nei Reuven could not go back home until that period was finished. The other issue, which is la'at la'at, the pen yirbeh alecha chayat ha'sadeh, was understood to have pockets of people, of non-Jews, that would keep particular areas settled, that b'meshech hazman, gradually, a particular shevet would easily displace and did not require the milchama of all Yisrael. These pockets we find go on and on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very upset about the fact that we weren't willing to wipe out these pockets on a shevet by shevet basis. But what we're going to discuss here in Yoshua is only the national war, the national knisa, and we're soon coming to the point where Yoshua tells everybody the national war effort is completed, B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven can go home. We're going to do now the Nachala, despite the fact that there are pockets. So we're still calling over here the national kibush. Lo haita ir, and all of this, amazingly, just like in Mitzrayim, you'd think that the Mitzrayim would want to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's offer. I'll make you a deal you can't refuse. And they couldn't bring themselves to accept. Lo haita ir asher yishlimal b'nei Yisrael, bilti achivi yoshve givon. There wasn't a single nation that was ready to make peace, except for the Givonim. Et hakol lakhu b'milchama. You know why? Kimi et Adonai haitala chazeket libam. You ever heard those words before? So just like Paro, Vania chazeket libo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made these people committed to their own stance, likrat hamilchamat Yisrael, leman hacharimam. We weren't particularly interested in having these jokers around. Levilti hayot lem techina, so that they should be mercilessly exterminated, because had they sued for peace, of course, it would have been only mercy. Kileman hashmidam, kasher tivadunait Moshe. The extirpation of the indigenous population was essential, either through their leaving or through their being exterminated. But because of that, we couldn't afford too many of these Givoni-like people. Then, after the locals and the centers were wiped out, it was now time to turn the attention to the Anakim, who were still around. And Vayachreta the Anakim in Ahar, min Hebron, min Dvir, min Anav, umikol Har Yuda, umikol Har Yisrael. Remember that the Anakim showed up yet, all the way at the time of Avram Avinu, who defeated the Rephaim. And that meant that the land in general, as we saw in Devarim, was called Eretz Rephaim. So that the Rephaim did not pay much attention to the going-ons of the lesser mortals, but it came time now to turn attention to the Anakim, and we're going to see later the details. This is just sort of a klal of what happened. Later on, we'll get into details of the Anakim. Lo notar Anakim be'eretz b'nei Yisrael. The land inhabited by the Jews was freed of this race of Anakim. Rak ba'aza, begat, uba'ashtod nisharu, and of course they do show up later on. Vayikach Yoshua et kol ha'aretz, kechol asher diber Adonai Moshe. And so Yoshua took the entire land. Vayitna, and again it doesn't mean he really took the entire land, because he took the entire national campaign for the land. And this was at the end of 7 years. And he left a lot of pockets, which caused a lot of trouble. Vayitna Yoshua l'nachala li'Yisrael, kemachlekotam l'shifteihem, v'ha'aretz shakta v'milchama. And so after that period, and these, again, it appears as one word in a sentence, which itself doesn't talk about the time, but as the Gemara is medayik, the wars of Yehoshua took 7 years, these opening wars. And the Nachala also took 7 years. So these words, v'shakta, I mean, it sounds like, you know, great, overnight all this happened. This was a long Yomim Shel Tzar, which all of the arguments among the Shvatim needed to be resolved, in which all of the Gvulos needed to be misuman, in which Yoshua was going around marking boundaries, planting trees along boundaries, the special, the Chatzav trees. And this became a massive undertaking. That is the Gemara Megillah talks about some of the arguments between the Shvatim. It's all hidden here because it's not the essential achievement of Yoshua, which is, as often happens, given to us almost instantaneously.